Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We do have a tornado warning in our area. There was an area of circular motion spotted near Montgomery. So just beware, be careful, and take good care. We don't want anything to happen to you at all. We just want to make sure you're completely aware of what's going on at all times. James Franklin was on the Big Ten teleconference today. Of course, he's asked about the 4th and 5 play call. Thought his answer to it was actually very interesting. Not about the actual play call itself, but it is very important at certain points, no matter what, that the head coach steps up, and he, from point one, he says, look, it's me, it's me, it's me. Well, Ricky Ronnie, of course, in an interview with Ralph Russo of the Associated Press, said, hey, look, he said the 4th and 5 call was his responsibility. The players after the game all said that it was their responsibility. Well, James Franklin was asked about that today, and he said, I said, ultimately, it's on me, but I guess what I am proud of is that we created an environment here and a culture here where players want to take responsibility, where assistant coaches want to take responsibility. I think that has a lot of value. That makes me proud of what we're building here. But again, as I said Saturday night, ultimately I'm the head coach and I'm responsible. And that's true. That, you know, some head coaches, as we all know, don't do that. I've heard them blame the players. I've heard them, you know, blame the call. He took responsibility for it, but then he's backed up by other people. Said, nah, that's on me. And then the player, nah, that's on us. He's like, okay, that does tell you something in a bad moment, what you have around you. And I think that is something to be taken out of it. Obviously, you'd rather be sitting here talking about the success of whatever play ended up being called on that 4th and 5 and whatever field goal was kicked to win the game. I mean, you'd rather be sitting here talking about that. But you do get in a situation like this, and you find out at least certain things, and he found out that his offensive coordinator is willing to step up and say, nope, that's me. He saw his players step up and say, no, that's them. And ultimately, he's the one that's been stepping up the entire time, saying, no, ultimately, it's on me. And so you do have people that are accountable all the way around with the program. Okay. Now, of course, you know, there are fans sitting there right now saying, well, that's great. I want to win. I hear you. Believe me, they hear you. All right, our play-by-play call of the day. It is always fun to hear Bob Uecker, and Bob Uecker gets the call success with the Milwaukee Brewers.
Here it is, swinging fly ball in the right center. Broxton is there, and they're the champions.
Bob Uecker, the Brewers are the champions. That means the Cubs tonight will take on the Colorado Rockies at Wrigley Field in the one-game playoff tonight. All right, let's get to the recruiting component of Saturday night. Penn State right now with 14 verbal commitments on the list right now. And that's up to date. And with us is Ryan Snyder from Rivals, Blue White Illustrated. Hopefully the baby's doing well. Hopefully the baby's asleep. Ryan, great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How you doing, bud?
Doing well. Do we have to keep it quiet because it's nap time for the baby, or?
No, we're okay this time. He's in the crib. He's big now, Steve, so, like, he can sit up and play with things.
It's, yeah, you can also
ball game.
He can also climb out.
Yeah, we're getting close to that stage. We'll be baby-proofing the house here in about 3 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Penn State had a large crowd when it comes to recruits. Give us some idea of the numbers that were involved on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a ballpark 150-ish. Now, like, when you include friends of friends and teammates and, teammates and friends of friends and,
right.
You know, family and guests, all that stuff. I mean, there's over, the sidelines are packed. You know, there's 200-plus people. But, like, when it really comes down to, guys that are scholarship-worthy, guys that, could really play here, it's like 50, 60-ish range, which is still phenomenal. I mean, you don't see those numbers at, I'm not trying to throw schools on the bus, but, the Virginias of the world, Boston Colleges, a lot of the schools in the region
right.
would die to get their some, 60-plus of their highest-ranked prospects in 2019, 2020, so forth. So to get those kind of numbers is great. 10-plus official visitors, all of which are, sit near the top of the staff's board in 2019. So we can go all day. I mean, there was two dozen-plus 2020 guys, all of which that already hold scholarship offers from the staff and, a few others that'll get offers down the road and, even some really solid 2021 guys. I before the week started, I went back and compared it to previous whiteouts, last year's game mm-hmm. against Michigan, the 2 years ago against Ohio State, and the numbers of elite talent is just on a completely different level. I mean, put it this way, there was twice as many Rivals 250 prospects this weekend as there were last year. And, Penn State had a pretty good year in 2016. They built some momentum up,
right.
but it just shows how two elite seasons and how that impacts on the recruiting trail. They had more top 100 prospects here this weekend than the past two whiteouts combined. I mean, there are a lot of stats that show that this was without a doubt, the most talented group that they've assembled for a regular season game. I mean, they've had some great lists for the Lash Bash and so on and so forth, but when it comes to, big-time regular season games, this is the best list I've ever seen.
All right, that goes to the next part, the ability to not only get them excited as to what they saw, but also the ability to really seriously consider it. What were some of the reactions you received out of it?
Great. I mean, it doesn't – forget what happened at the end of the game. That really doesn't matter. Now, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because there are some guys who really, really like Ohio State, really, really like Penn State, and – they're not going to commit anytime soon. There's going to be a lot of other factors that play into those commitments down the road. But as we've seen in times in years past, we have seen guys maybe one or two mention, went to this game and something happened, didn't like, whatever it may be. So I don't want to ever say it doesn't matter. But when you talk about the atmosphere, when you talk about what this staff does to try its best to accommodate 150-plus recruits and, give them the attention they deserve, it's an A-plus on that perspective. And even not even just in the stadium, but everything around it and all the fans and just the overall scene, that far outweighs anything else. And we've consistently seen that when talking to 2020 guys and the top 2019 guys. I mean, they all gush about this weekend. And I mean, of course, I think by now most fans have seen the Penn State got a commitment last night and tight end Brenton Strange, who he's a heck of a story, man. I mean, just a couple months ago, had some decent offers, but, he really exploded over the summer, went to a ton of camps. He left almost all of these camps with offers, and, Penn State was one of those. And basically, once he got the Penn State offer, we kind of knew it was a matter of time. So, they already have one solid commitment out of it. But this weekend will, without a doubt, lead to more commitments down the road. Just a matter of time.
When you look at that, what are some of the interviews that you're getting about interest and the possibility of commitments when you've had a chance to at least talk to a parent, mm-hmm. talk to the student athlete, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's talk about 2019 with that discussion because, the 2020 guys, they have such a long way to go.
Right.
Now, don't get me wrong, I do think Penn State is going to start getting 2020 commitments here sooner than later. They're overdue for that. But with the 2019 guys that were on campus this weekend, a lot of these guys have held out for a reason. They could have made commitments well before now, and they held out because they want to see how the season goes, and not just at Penn State, but at other schools. They want to see, maybe if other schools come calling, but I think most importantly, they want to take their official visit. And whether it's now, whether it's down the road, A bunch of them took official visits this weekend, but actually a bunch didn't take official visits, which is notable because they'll be able to come back then in December and hang out with some of the committee guys that, they always do a big weekend in December where all the commits and their families get to hang out. So I think it's going to lead commitments down the road. Maybe we'll see something in the next week or two. I think a lot of these guys will go home, start focusing back on high school football, and eventually take other visits, which is fine. I mean, I think that's what the staff kind of expected. They have a lot of elite players out there that are favoring Penn State right now, and a bunch of them are up here this weekend. Issa Isaac's one of them. They just got Brenton Strange. I think Jared Hunt, the defensive tackle out of New York, is another guy that was up here. And Zach Harrison, of course, the five-star defensive lineman out of Ohio. I don't want to say Penn State's a favorite there, but they're very much in the mix. I think he could go to Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State. Just take a pick. He could end up in any of them. So there's a lot of good talent that will absolutely use this experience, use this weekend in their decision process down the road. It just might take another couple weeks or a month or two. They just need to take some more visits, and I think it's just a matter of time until they join.
Okay, this is the second year of the early signing period. Has that changed strategy on both the student-athlete part and also on a school's part?
Yes, absolutely. We can go all day on that one. Well, first off, with official visits, I mean, we're seeing way more official visits now during the season. And we started seeing that last year, too, just compared to a couple years ago. You know, coaches want to do everything they can to get these guys on campus earlier than normal. You know, it used to be, okay, let's try and get the last official visit. And that's still important at times, you know, because coaches want to get their word in last. But now what's more important now is making sure they get them on campus for the big weekend, which was this past weekend. These kids, they can commit at any time, and I think as we move on with the early signing period, more and more are going to want to commit early in the process, especially after what we saw last year with some of these guys just getting bombarded by dozens of extra schools because they're the only top prospect left, you know, that didn't make a move in December. Yeah. So it's every recruit is different. You know, they'll give you different reasons on why they want to make a move, or, you know, why taking these visits early, or why they even want to wait. I mean, there's for example, Noah Pola-Gates is a safety. He comes from Polynesian roots, and he really wants to make a commitment at the Polynesian Bowl. It's really important to him. So he's going to hold off and wait all the way until January, where, you know, a lot of other guys are saying, I can't handle this now, man. I got to get this over with as soon as possible. So there's no really set answer with that. Every recruit and every family has a different opinion on that situation.
There's always a certain guy in a class that becomes like a bell cow, and they go out and they're really going to recruit hard for the staff once they've verbaled themselves. Sean Clifford was like that for Penn State along the way. Is there somebody in this class right now that has that kind of attitude that is actively recruiting people, even though they're only just a verbal right now?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, every year has a couple. I think guys like Brenham and Clifford, like, they really got the publicity because they were open about it. And they, like, you know, went to the media and was like, hey, I'm doing this and that. But there's always more than just one or two. And give credit to James Franklin and his staff for that, because this is something that they make very clear when these guys commit. Hey, listen, you guys are just as important in this as we are, you know, and your relationships with them are going to play a factor, and they have. So, for this class, for example, I think Devin Ford, Keaton Ellis, Caden Wallace, and Brandon Smith are the four guys I look at as you know, the leader. Not I don't want to say leaders, because these guys are all leaders in their own right, but guys that have really maybe gone out of their way a little bit to help the staff. I mean, Keaton, for example, you know, he's really played a big role with some of the other cornerbacks that are looking at Penn State. Devin Ford, who was talking to Aaron Young the other night, he's another running back out of Coatesville that took an unofficial visit. And Brandon Smith and Caden Wallace, they talk to everybody. I mean, they're just really down-to-earth guys, really smart guys, too. You know, guys that really have their head on straight and, you know, understand what's best about a Penn State degree and just the overall, you know, Penn State program and what it stands for, I guess you'd say. They really do a good job stressing that to other players. But, you know, I don't want to say the guys like Lance Dixon don't do it, because they do. You know, guys like Joey Porter Jr., he just came in not that long ago. He reaches out to guys, and, you know, so does Marquise Wilson, Tyler Rudolph. We can go on and on. You know, they all do a little bit here and there. But like I said, those first four guys I mentioned, Ellis and Smith, Ford and Wallace. I see it from them a little bit more than others.
Yeah, some guys are a little bit more gung-ho and have really, really mm-hmm. deeply bought in. And that's and those are the guys that you're looking at. Give me an idea, timetable next couple of weeks, what you're looking at here, and then with homecoming coming up, how important will the Michigan State weekend be?
Yeah, well, you know the home schedule just as well as anybody. And I think all Penn State fans realize this is one of the best home slates we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, when you have Michigan State, Iowa, and Wisconsin all still coming to town, that's why we didn't see a lot of recruits in those first couple games, because Penn State was like, hey, look, you know, if you want to come up, come up, but we want to get you to Ohio State or Wisconsin, Michigan State. But long story short, this week is all about scouting. You know, the coaches are out on the road. James Franklin already stepped by. I think he's Zach Harrison in Columbus. They will be out on the road all week, you know, scouting players, stopping by schools. They can't do any in-home visits yet. That doesn't take place until January. But they'll be stopping by, meeting with a lot of coaches and seeing some games Friday and Saturday. So that's the big priority this week. We haven't really been able to build on a Michigan State visitor list yet, but look, whenever you get a top 25 team in a town, it's homecoming weekend. It'll be a 3:30 kickoff, so you know the energy will be good in the stadium. That'll be another very good week. Will it have 150 recruits and 60 plus scholarship guys? That might be a little bit too much to expect, but you know, we'll see another dozen or so elite players. You know, maybe a few official visits. We know, for example, Noah Kane is the top running back. He won't be up for Michigan State, but he will be up for Wisconsin. I'm sure a few of those guys will be popping up here in the next couple of days for the Michigan State game.
James Franklin gets himself out on Friday nights. I mean, he just, you know, he can take in any game he wants. I mean, he gets himself out there on Friday nights. You've talked to enough people. What kind of impression does that make when he's there?
You know, James, I've gotten to know James well. You know, when it comes to charisma, when it comes to, you know, knowing how to, I don't want to say sell yourself because that doesn't sound genuine, but know how to carry yourself, he's perfect. You know, we put up a video not that long ago. He was at 2020 wide receiver Julian Fleming from Southern Columbia. A lot of fans understand him and how important he is to Penn State already. You know, he went up to see Julian a couple weeks ago, and, you know, first off, he wore number 4 jersey. That's Julian's number. That obviously grabs some attention. But you know, playing catch with the kids at halftime, you know, shaking everybody's hands. He's really genuine about it. You know, there's a lot of coaches who, I think a lot of coaches, they come off a little bit of fake. There's a lot of coaches that, you know, maybe you're just quiet. They keep to themselves. They don't try to communicate. I think James is excellent at the way he goes about it. You know, he's open, always taking photos. You know, smiling. I'm not going to say he's like a presidential candidate, but it's the closest thing I can compare it to. You know, he knows how to carry himself, knows how to, you know, shake hands, and I don't want to say win people over, but, you know, at least get them thinking about, you know, Julian or whatever player it would be playing for that coach. So he's excellent at those situations, and it's just what he excels at.
Always a pleasure, Ryan. Appreciate it very much. Thanks.
My son's screaming in the other room. I got to get over there. Thank you.
We've all been down that road. And I'll tell you right now, the...
Dinner time.
Well, yeah, but the Jones family is sitting here anxiously awaiting the next one.
Grand Bambino.
Yes. It's this week. It's what we've been told. I mean, now you got to give us credit, all right? I mean, the Jones family. I mean, it's the bye week.
See a spike in births and wedding receptions this weekend.
Well, it's like, I told you the Ron Moeller story, didn't I?
Mole man. That's right.
Kent State.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that's right. He was on a trip for a wedding. At a wedding, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, of course, he goes back this week, and all of us are like, what, big game?
Wasn't he in Amsterdam or the Netherlands or something, cutting it pretty close to the blue-white game?
He was.
And he kept reiterating to you back and forth, I will be there, I will be there. Moment. Yeah.
Well, then, of course, Jack and I kill him for not going to the game, okay? And Jack says, I thought you told everybody you're the spotter. He says, yeah. He says, how come the game went just as smoothly without you?
Because, and I've always said to Ron, I said, how do you go around and tell everybody you're the spotter? And I said, you're the only spotter that sits two seats down from the play-by-play guy.
I'd love to be in the room just to get the reaction from Roger and Jeff when this is going back and forth.
Well, some of this is on the golf course. Some of this is on the phone. Some of this is in the booth.
Not just the booth.
Because what Ron will do is he'll call me up. He'll go, hey, I've got Jack on the other line. So now the three of us are like... He says, then he'll say... Why did I call you two jokers?
It's like he's waiting for the double whammy to happen, but doesn't realize it when he gets the three-way call going. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, ooh.
Jack says, we believe you feed off of it. You two jokers, you two clowns. Like what? I'm either going to be dead or divorced. And there's a pause. I said, well, okay. I said, what are the issues?
Click.
Okay. That's the thing with Ron. There is no click. he just lets hammer and me pile on.
And see, you do.
That's one thing about Jack, and I've talked to Joanne about this, Jack's wife, right? I said, a lot of people do not know or realize, unless you know, how funny Jack is. I mean, like, I'm talking, like, awesome sense of humor funny. All right? He cracks a one-liner like anybody. And, you know, no, because on the air, you don't hear that. Off the air. it really is, especially when the two of us are together around somebody. It's like the vultures are circling. it's buzzer's luck for the person in our way. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Sean, it's been an interesting afternoon weather-wise.
Yeah, it has been. We were telling you about a tornado warning on Northumberland County, now taken off of the warning. Latest information we've received from the National Weather Service in State College, now in effect until 5:20. The tornado warning is for portions of Lycoming County, Columbia County, and Montour County. Weather spotters have reported a funnel cloud in Exchange. Exchange is just east of Turbotville and north of Washingtonville. Also, keep in mind, you're getting that area of State Road 1006 and also not too far away from Route 118. So if you're near the Lairdsville area, be extra cautious, especially over the next several minutes with this tornado warning, which is in effect until 5:20. Again, that's for Lycoming, Montour, and portions of Columbia County. And for the rest of the valley, we have a tornado watch, and that's in effect until 11 tonight. I'll get you more information to it, 5:06 on the Late Day News Roundup.
Yeah. Okay, we'll keep everybody up to date on that. All right, the Steelers. You know, it's interesting when you're going well, everything falls into place, and then certain teams hit that bad spot where, for example, they've got terrific pitching, but not enough hitting, and they keep losing. They finally have a day where they go out and they hit the living daylights out of the ball, and it's the one day you don't pitch. Well, the Steelers have been playing really good offense and have been struggling defensively. Well, Sunday night they gave up 9 points, 3 field goals in the second half, and didn't produce any. With that, we bring in Neil Coulong. Neil, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing well, thanks. Normally the sign of a losing team is one that when one part goes right, something else fails, and then finally you get something corrected and the other part fails. Have I just described the 1-2-1 Pittsburgh Steelers?
I'm not sure. Too many things succeeded, I think, in your scenario. That's not quite the way that I've seen it.
I was too positive, Neil. I was too positive.
In many ways, that does describe typically the first quarter of the season, if not the first half of the season of the Steelers, probably in the last 6-7 years. Not a team that's gotten out of the gates particularly well, and this season clearly is no exception to that. There really aren't many good things. You know, you're really not seeing good stuff overall. In fact, it drives you down such a negative scale. The one positive that you will see are some good things in the win over Tampa Bay, but that's against a secondary that was comprised, I'm pretty sure, of all rookies at one point. It lost two guys in the middle of that game, and Roethlisberger, fortunately for the Steelers, got just enough points to hold off those pesky Buccaneers that are in a little bit of a free fall right now. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's tough sledding in Pittsburgh, that's for sure.
How much of it? Look, Baltimore came in with a terrific defensive resume entering the game. How much of it was Baltimore the way they played defense, and how much of it may have been the Steelers' offense?
I think Baltimore is definitely a good defensive team. You knew that running the ball was going to be really, really hard. And with that, you'll get into what I think we should now refer to as the Baltimore trap. When the Steelers have lost by a noticeable margin to the Ravens, the biggest issue that they've had is they've gone into the game without the ability to really try to, I don't want to say enforce the run on the other team, but they've had that option taken away, especially in the second half. They fell down by enough, they couldn't run the ball in the second half, and Tomlin even said this during his press conference, they didn't possess the ball. They went 3 and out, I think, 4 times in the second half. They didn't have a chance to add any dimension to their offense. You know, when all they're doing is just throwing, what are the Ravens going to do? They're going to drop back and just tee off. And you see that in a lot of games that are very similar to the one that we saw Sunday. They'll just squeeze the Steelers into oblivion, and by the fourth quarter, they can just, you know, aim for his back heel and wait for that interception. That's exactly what happened. The game wasn't even all that dissimilar, I think, from 2014 or 2015, I want to say, in Baltimore. The Thursday night game, I think the same score was 26-14.
Right.
A game that if you watched it, it looked a lot worse than what the end score was.
All right. Have teams figured out a way to defense Antonio Brown? And if so, what kind of a problem is that for the Steelers?
You know, one thing I find interesting that people aren't really talking about is the way the Steelers are playing offense right now and the way that teams are covering them is exactly what New England did when Le'Veon Bell went down early on.
Right.
Brown fought his way gallantly to some catches in that game, but they absolutely were not going to let him make a big play. That's what Baltimore did. They did a great job with him underneath, and on top of that, I think Roethlisberger blew a couple throws that you didn't expect him to really miss on at any point of the season. He's really been up and down. We haven't seen great consistent football from him. He hit a stretch both against Baltimore and against Kansas City, those two home losses that they have, where he was lights out. He was playing really well. He was getting the ball down the field. He was getting protection. And then that just kind of went away, and it was bracketed by long stretches of nothing. So it really, that's a big part of the reason, one, why they lost both of those games, two, why their defense, which clearly is not the strength of their team, was as stressed as it was throughout the game. They had to defend so much, you know, and to be fair, Kansas City and Baltimore, they have really dynamic offense. They have a lot of different things that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh's defense probably isn't going to hold up against those guys. They'll play Baltimore again. If the Steelers are really lucky, they'll see Kansas City in the playoffs again. With all of that, they're going to have to find a way to possess the ball a lot longer than they have, and also figure out how to, you know, actually defend the receivers down the field, which they aren't doing. I mean, it's not even close. None of the completions that Flacco had in the second half were even contested. There was nobody by it. It was just the weirdest thing to see.
Right, no question. All right, so now let's get to the Le'Veon Bell question. I suppose there's a red carpet, a white steed ready to bring him on home. in week after, was it after week seven or during the week seven bye?
That's kind of funny because I think Jeremy Fowler of ESPN went back to Le'Veon Bell and asked him specifically about that. And in classic Bell fashion, I don't know, I'll show up at some point. I'm not sure if he learns that from Antonio Brown or what, but neither one of them are exactly committed to giving you an exact date and time of when they're going to do something. But I would imagine what he means is he's going to show up after the bye week is officially over and you know, get himself ready to work for Cleveland in week eight. If he doesn't happen to show up during, you know, whatever practice they'll have before the bye week ends, I'm sure everyone will freak out about it. But the reality is there's not really a whole lot that he's going to do there anyway, and I don't think we've really seen enough to think that he would bother showing up during the bye week. I think he'd rather just do it after the bye and get ready to work, and I would expect that more than anything. But if he does happen to show up during the bye week, great, more power to him, but I'm not sure how much it's going to matter. He's going to need the hits. He's going to need the game reps to get himself back into football shape.
Is there any clue as to what kind of shape he's in right now?
We haven't seen enough, I don't think. I mean, I hate people that say, yeah, I saw him, you know, he was out in his jet ski, he looks pretty buff. And it's like, all right, well, you know, most of those guys are like that, especially the running backs, the skill position players. Get him in his pads, get him around other players. That's the only way you can really tell. And for me, it's not as much a weight thing as it's a feet thing. You have to see the way he's moving. You have to see how his body's reacting when he cuts, changes direction. For me, I remember talking with you about this last year. What we saw from him at the beginning of the season was he was slow. He didn't look at all
That's
like
right.
a player that had cut 20, 25 pounds. But he didn't look big either. You know, it's I didn't think it was a weight issue. It just, like, the timing wasn't there. His vision wasn't there. He wasn't trusting it.
He seemed stiff. He seemed stiff to me last year.
Those are the reps that you need to get in training camp, in my opinion. It gets you acclimated to what's happening, to the speed of the game. And that's not something I feel like you can just pick up and put back down. You have to get out there and see it a couple times before you're really, you know. Le'Veon Bell is easily the best cutback runner in the NFL right now. He's not a straight line speed guy, but he cuts at an angle and a speed that nobody else can duplicate. And I don't think anybody else has been able to since Adrian Peterson in his prime. He can't do that if he's not timing up the defender the way that he does. That's his style of running. He can't use his best weapon if he's not in rhythm with himself. And to me, it didn't look like he was in rhythm last year. So that would be my primary concern. And there's no way we're going to know that until he goes up against Cleveland in week eight, assuming he is out there.
Stylistically, I felt over the years, especially when Bruce Arians was there, but stylistically over the years, I always felt the Steelers' offense looked a little bit different than everybody else's. I feel like when I watch the Steelers now, I feel like I am watching everybody else. What do you think?
That's an interesting observation. I'll put the glasses on and take a look around. But the main thing I see with them, and I don't have stats to bear this out, just an observation. It doesn't look to me like they're running as much motion as they used to.
Right.
That was kind of a staple with Todd Haley. He loved putting the tight ends on the move to give Roethlisberger a sense of what the defense is doing. And a lot of the times, Roethlisberger's call could have been one of three plays. And a lot of it depended upon what the defense was doing in response to the motion that they put in. I don't think that they're running that as much. And I think a big part of that is because James Conner is largely stationary.
Yes.
You really can't you can't flex him out to the slot and expect him to do anything. Cornerback, a safety, even a linebacker, they're really not going to have much of a problem defending James Conner in a five-yard radius. Le'Veon Bell, he can beat safeties in that. I mean, the teams that really stopped Pittsburgh over the last couple of years, they use nickelbacks on it.
Right.
That's how talented of a route runner he is. You don't have to worry about that with Conner. I think with it, they're getting away from their motion just because they don't want to show even the strength, if they don't have to, of the formation. So it looks to me like it's a lot more static than it was. And you heard a couple players say that in the locker room over the last couple of days. The offense really, I don't want to say stagnant, but it doesn't look nearly as dynamic as it used to. You get a sense of what they're doing when you watch them long enough. And I think, to your point, there are not a whole lot of offenses that have moving pieces like Le'Veon Bell that can add that level of dynamic ability, like explosive ability to what they're doing. I think that might be why it looks something like a lot of what other teams do. here's a hint, don't ever watch the Buffalo Bills if you don't like what you're seeing with the Steelers right now. It's a team that has no explosion at all. They have no playmakers anywhere. They're boring because they really can't do anything. And I think the Steelers are less of an offense right now because we're used to seeing one that they really could do anything all over the field in any formation, and they can't do that right now.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we'll come back with a weather update and wrap things up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, great to have you with us. Couple of notes. First of all, weather-wise, still that tornado warning in effect. It may have expired, and a couple of areas may expand.
Yeah, we just got some new information. Now till 5:30, tornado warning is in effect for portions of Lycoming County and Tioga County. So areas Route 15 between Buttonwood and Blossburg, be watch out there. And also Route 14 north of Trout Run up to the Bradford County line. So communities like Ralston and up to Morris, actually, ski sawmill area, kind of under the guts. Just very rare for a tornado to, and that's such of a rural and not really not smooth terrain, but just for a one to form in that area is very, very rare, and even this time time of year even more rare. So that's in effect until 5:30, and a tornado watch stays in effect for the whole area until 11 tonight.
Yeah, I remember Memorial Day weekend 1985, Elk County tornado tore through there. Okay, the basketball trials are underway. There's Matt Norlander from CBS wrote this. He says, didn't take long for the trial to make headlines and send up flares around the sport. Casey Donnelly, attorney for defendant James Gatto, a former high-ranking Adidas executive who's been charged with two counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud, said in her opening statement that Gatto's orchestration of a $100,000 payment to send five-star prospect Bryant Bowen to Louisville was a way to level the playing field. After Bowen's illicit commitment to Louisville became known due to federal probes, longtime Louisville coach Rick Pitino was fired. Gatto's legal team brought a new school into scope and did so with a bombshell accusation. Oregon has now been roped into the story and in a significant way. University of Oregon, of course, one of the great Nike schools, obviously, Phil Knight's alma mater. The defense said on Tuesday that Under Armour put up $20,000 to push Silvio D'Souza to Maryland, while Arizona was involved to the amount of $150,000 to land Nasir Little, a projected 2019 lottery pick who's expected to start for North Carolina this season. D'Souza, by the way, is at Kansas. Gatto's attorneys are aiming to show college basketball's recruiting ground is dirty, potentially necessarily dirty, at a high level. The prosecution is alleging that Gatto, his Adidas associate Merle Code, and basketball middleman and runner Christian Dawkins coordinated illegal benefits to high school prospects and their families and representatives. In doing so, the Department of Justice alleges the universities were defrauded because money was conspired to be delivered across state lines. The crimes are federal in nature. They use wiretaps and so forth, which we've talked about on the show. Gatto's defense team is not pushing back on what did or did not happen when it comes to those wiretaps. Witnesses in the case will be called in the coming days, including Brian Bowen Sr., the father of the former
Louisville prize recruit. Bowen now is playing pro ball himself in Australia. Bowen's father made a deal which gives him immunity from being prosecuted. His testimony will be among the more anticipated parts of the trial, which is expected to last 3 to 4 weeks. The Oregon thing, hearing the name Oregon is not new to me. It's probably new to everybody else. Because remember, Penn State was in that situation where they were going to play either Oregon or Marquette in the NIT, and it ended up being Marquette because Marquette won at home over Oregon. But, you know, as you go along in this, you don't know if everything's accurate or not, but you hear various names thrown out. Well, Oregon has always been one of the names thrown out. Now, they're not an Adidas school. They're obviously a Nike school, big-time Nike school. Phil Knight has poured so much money into that. It's unbelievable how much money they put in. All right, baseball playoffs tonight. Cubs and Colorado Rockies. Tomorrow night, the Yankees and the A's. One-game playoffs.
Feels like we've known for 4 months that the Yankees and A's are going to face off in the wild card.
Yeah, the only thing we didn't know is at one point, like, Seattle looked pretty good. But then Oakland overtook them. Severino's going to get the ball for the Yankees tomorrow night. Some people thought it might be Tanaka.
Yeah, it didn't take long for Joe Maddon yesterday to make his announcement to have Lester on the bump tonight for the Cubs.
John Lester is one of the great postseason pitchers ever. Ever. I'll say this, though. One of the few times in John Lester's career where he did not pitch well in the postseason, and it's rare, was actually the one-game playoff when he was pitching for the A's against Kansas City. It's kind of cruising along. You thought, well, because remember, the A's had picked up Lester in the trade with the Red Sox. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they got him here. And all of a sudden, like, I want to say it was the seventh inning, the wheels came off the wagon. And for John Lester in postseason, that is a rarity. His postseason mark has been outstanding in his career. Now, everyone talks about Clayton Kershaw. Lester's probably been a better postseason pitcher than Kershaw's been, to the point where I told people before, if I had one game to win, I probably would pick Lester and not Kershaw. People look at me like I'm crazy. Except I've got the background of looking at Lester showing me that the bigger the moment, the better he is.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.